Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for joining What's Happening Now in Progressive MS Research. Your host for today is Ms. Heather Donegan. Ms. Donegan, you may begin.
Thank you so much. Good evening, everyone. My name is Heather Donegan, and I'm the Director of Programs and Services from the Indiana State Chapter of the National MS Society. On behalf of the Society, I would like to welcome you to tonight's program titled, What's Happening Now in the Progressive MS Research. This program is brought to you through a collaboration of the National MS Society's Midwest Region Chapters. Together, we provide programs, services, and research to improve the lives of people affected by MS. Recordings of this call will be available through each chapter for anyone wishing to refresh their notes or share with a friend. Our speaker provided a handout for tonight's call. If you did not receive the handout in advance, please don't hesitate to contact your local chapter office to receive a copy. We would also like to mention there is a wealth of opportunity made available by the Society through your local chapter for all levels of participation. We encourage you to reach out to your local chapter by calling 1-800-344-4867 or by visiting their website for a list of upcoming events and programs. Tonight's program is supported by an educational grant from Genzyme. Please note that during the first part of the program, during our speaker's presentation, you will be in listen mode. Feel free to jot your comments and questions down as you listen. Following the presentation, the operator will open the lines for anyone to ask their questions. We ask all participants with questions to limit their time to one question per request so that as many participants as possible may enjoy a direct response from our speaker. Tonight, we are fortunate to have as our speaker Dr. Nicholas LaRocca. Dr. LaRocca is a clinical psychologist who has worked in the field of MS for over 30 years. He was an associate professor at Albert Einstein College of Medicine and New York Medical College before joining the Society in 1997. He currently serves as Vice President of Healthcare Delivery and Policy Research in the Research Programs Department of the Society. In this role, he has responsibility for society funding of research to address the symptoms of MS, rehabilitation, epidemiology, psychosocial aspects of MS, as well as health policy studies. He has a long-standing interest in cognitive and rehabilitation and co-authored a book on cognitive changes in MS that was published in 2006. During the last several years, he has worked with the Agency for Toxic Substances and Disease Registry and the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention on the establishment of a national registry for MS, Parkinson's disease, and other neurological conditions. In 2011, he was appointed to the National Advisory Board on Medical Rehabilitation Research at the National Institutes of Health and became a chairperson of that advisory board in 2013. And now, I would like to welcome Dr. LaRocca to begin this evening's program.
All right. Well, thank you, Heather, and thank you for this opportunity to speak about progressive MS and the exciting things that are happening in progressive MS research. And I also want to thank everyone from the Midwest region for tuning in tonight, and I look forward to speaking with you. Now, as Heather mentioned, there is a handout for this presentation, but I know that very often not everyone is able to get their hands on the handout in time. And so as I go through my presentation, I'll really try to explain things as well as I can and to not really rely that much on the handout. So if you don't have the handout in front of you, I think that you should be okay in terms of following along. So if you do have the handout, I'm moving on to slide number two. And so slide number two shows exactly what we're going to be talking about tonight. So we're going to first talk a little bit about progressive MS. You know, what is it exactly? How do we define what's progressive MS as opposed to other forms of MS? We're going to talk about many of the key advances in progressive MS research. And also we're going to focus on what the society is doing to find solutions for people who are living not only with progressive forms of MS, but all forms of MS. So moving on to slide number three, when you ask the question, what is progressive MS, the answer really depends on who you are. To the neurologist, progressive MS is a certain pattern. It's a course of MS that has a certain pattern over the lifetime of the individual who has progressive MS. For the radiologist, it's a certain pattern that the radiologist will see on neuroimaging, particularly on MRI. For the neuropathologist, it takes a particular form in looking at what happens in the brain. For the physiatrist or physical therapist or occupational therapist, it often means a particular pattern of symptoms, and frequently means that an individual who has a progressive form of MS as opposed to relapsing or remitting MS maybe is experiencing more challenges and more difficult challenges with their MS. And of course, for the person with MS, progressive MS means all of those things, and particularly means some very particular challenges in living their best lives. So moving on to slide number 4. As you probably are familiar, MS is divided into several different patterns or courses over the lifetime. The vast majority of people who are diagnosed with MS are diagnosed with what's known as the relapsing remitting form of MS. And all of the MS disease-modifying drugs that are on the market have been developed and have been approved for relapsing forms of MS. But there are other patterns of MS as well, you know, particularly primary progressive MS and secondary progressive MS. Primary progressive MS is a type of MS that begins when a person is diagnosed and just follows a pattern in which the challenges that are brought by the disease continue to get worse over time. Primary progressive MS is not that common, really only affects about 10 to 15% of people with MS. The more common type of progressive MS is what's known as secondary progressive MS. And secondary progressive MS develops after a person is diagnosed with relapsing or remitting MS. And over the course of time, on average, after about 20 years, about half of people who are diagnosed with relapsing or remitting MS convert to secondary progressive MS. And secondary progressive MS is a pattern in which the challenges of the disability associated with MS just slowly get worse over time, sometimes with flare-ups, and sometimes without definite flare-ups, just sort of over time getting a little bit worse. So progression, and we're up to slide number 5. So progression means a gradual worsening of the symptoms and the disability that are associated with MS. And again, we talked about the fact that secondary progressive is the most common form of MS, those people who originally experienced relapses but then transitioned just to a gradual worsening. And again, less common is the primary progressive form of MS in which there's onset without definite relapses or remissions. And then on to slide number 6, which if you're seeing it is a little bit complicated. And the question that many people ask, well, how is progressive MS different from relapsing MS? Well, researchers have looked at this question, and there are a number of differences. We've talked already about the fact that the pattern that people experience over the course of their lifetimes with relapsing, remitting MS versus progressive MS is different. However, researchers have found that when you look a little bit deeper, that there are a number of other differences between relapsing, remitting MS and secondary progressive MS particularly. So that in relapsing, remitting MS, there's what's known as a multifocal inflammation. And those of you who have had an MRI may be familiar with the fact that in relapsing remitting MS, if you look at an MRI, an individual with relapsing remitting MS, that you will see discrete lesions or bright spots in the brain where the myelin has been damaged by MS. Whereas in progressive forms of MS, you're somewhat less likely to see that very focal pattern on neuroimaging. And rather, what scientists have found that in progressive forms of MS, there seems to be more just a kind of a slow progression of changes within the brain without so much of those very, very focal types of lesions. So moving on to slide number 7. So what is it that we know about progression? Well, we know that progression often occurs early in people, even without symptoms, and progression can be tracked in a number of other ways, with neuroimaging, for example. We also know that people progress at different rates. Everybody's a little bit different. Some people progress rapidly, some progress slowly, and the rate is really unpredictable, not only from person to person, but even within a given person, a given individual, may progress rapidly at first and then slow down, or may experience different periods in their lives when the rate of progression is different. The primary progressive form of MS, which again is the least common, often takes a little bit longer to diagnose, and that's because the changes that occur in the central nervous system occur very slowly and are in a very diffused kind of way, and so it often leads to very subtle symptoms that are difficult to categorize by neurologists. And what we do know is that the progressive disability, the disability that's getting worse over time, definitely reflects what's happening in the central nervous system. It reflects the injury that MS is causing to the nerves. And moving on to slide number 8, the question that people most frequently ask is, you know, there are all these treatments on the market for relapsing forms of MS. Why aren't there treatments for progressive forms of MS? Well, there are a few explanations. So virtually every drug that's been approved for relapsing forms of MS has been evaluated in progressive forms of MS as well. Part of the problem that we run into in studying treatments for progressive forms of MS is that in studies looking at relapsing forms of MS, it's possible to use relapses as the outcome measure, to count relapses or the frequency of relapses or the severity of relapses, or to look at discrete lesions on the MRI. However, progressive forms of MS are much more difficult to study because we don't see the same sort of pattern of relapses and we don't see the same sort of patterns on MRI. And so it's difficult to find a good measure or a good assessment to use in clinical trials. So without that kind of quick readout that you can get in relapsing forms of MS, looking at relapses or looking at MRI lesions, it's a real challenge to study progressive forms of MS and to track the success or lack of success of therapies. Well, let's talk a little bit now, and we're moving on to slide 9. Let's talk a little bit about what are the potential mechanisms for nerve degeneration in MS that leads to a progression of disability. Well, there are a couple of different ways in which this happens, which scientists have identified. One is, number one, that there seems to be a dysfunction in myelin repair. Now, you probably all know that in MS, the myelin, which is the insulation that's wrapped around nerve fibers, that the myelin is attacked by MS. However, nature has provided a recovery function in the nervous system so that when myelin is damaged, the nervous system begins to try and restore it. However, this restoration process doesn't really proceed as far or as effectively as is necessary in order to repair all of the damage. And so there's some kind of dysfunction in that myelin repair mechanism. And so that dysfunction seems to prevent the neurons from being able to recover function. And as a result, it leaves the neurons vulnerable to additional damage. Now, we don't know exactly what nerve cell damage is caused by, but we know that it may be induced by a number of different factors, by what's known as exotoxicity, by oxidative stress, by loss of nerve cell support. So the nerve cells have sort of a structure, almost a skeleton in the nervous system that helps to support them and maintain them. And if that's dysfunctional, then there'll be some additional damage that could be done, and energy failure. So there are a lot of very subtle and complicated processes that may be going on, which produce damage to the actual nerve cell within the central nervous system. So moving on to slide number 10, and unfortunately, I think that your handout is probably in black and white, so I'll just describe what we're looking at. And we're looking at a picture of the part of the brain that is what's known as the white matter, and that's a part of the brain, and there are many areas of the brain like this that are very heavily myelinated. And in the normal brain, you'll see a lot of different nerve fibers, and you'll see that they're all nicely wrapped with myelin that's protecting them and helping them to function to transmit nerve impulses. And moving on to slide number 11, and when multiple sclerosis damages the myelin, the central nervous system begins to try and restore the myelin. And so some of the myelin actually comes back. It's actually repaired. But it doesn't go far enough so that if you were able to actually look in the central nervous system, you would see that the nerve fibers are beginning to recover some of their myelin, but that it's very limited. It just doesn't reach the normal level of myelin that hasn't been damaged. And moving on to slide number 12, and eventually an MS lesion reaches a point where it's demyelinated and the nerve fibers themselves are damaged and begin to die. So then in addition to the loss of myelin, there's actually the loss of the nerve fibers themselves. So moving on to slide number 13, so what are some of the key advances in research in progressive forms of MS? So let's take a look at that. And moving on to slide number 14. Well, there are a number of historic advances that have been funded by the society that have addressed not only understanding what progressive MS is all about, but also developing ways to address the challenges that people face with progressive forms of MS. So, for example, at one time, people with MS were discouraged from exercising because doctors felt that it might stress them too much and it would make them too tired and it wasn't a good thing. However, the society funded a study that provided the first results that showed that aerobic exercise, the kind of exercise like running or bicycling that helps you with cardiovascular fitness, that aerobic exercise could actually help to fight MS fatigue and to also help people with MS maintain a healthier cardiovascular function and also improve their quality of life. And so that research really began to change doctors' attitudes in terms of their old advice to people with MS to take it easy, don't overexert yourself, and so on. Also, the society funded research that showed that human adult brains have replacement cells, have what are known as oligodendrocyte precursor cells, that are the type of cells that have the potential for replacing and repairing myelin, and showed that transplanting those cells in an animal model, transplanting those cells, could actually begin to restore some function in mice that have an MS-like disease. Also, the society supported research on cognitive problems in MS, as well as different rehabilitation strategies to address those cognitive problems like memory loss and difficulty with processing speed. The society is also supporting development or provided support for development of a tool that measured quality of life in people with MS. And also the society funded early studies that eventually led to the approval of medications now on the market that can improve walking speed. Moving on to slide number 15. Some more recent advances, and we'll give you a couple of examples of that. We talked about the fact that myelin repair is something that's built into the nervous system, but that it doesn't go far enough to really make a difference. So the society funded early studies looking at promoting natural myelin repair with something known as anti-lingo. And lingo 1 is a substance that seems to inhibit remyelination. It interferes with the body's own natural process of restoring myelin. And so the anti-lingo 1 drug helps to promote remyelination, and that has been found, again, in the same MS-like disease that can be induced in mice. In early human trials, anti-lingo 1 has been shown to be safe, and it's currently in a phase 2 trial looking at whether or not it can induce remyelination far enough to improve function both in MS and in optic neuritis. Moving on to slide number 16, additional recent advances is what's known as repurposing. And repurposing is something that occurs when a drug that has been used for something else is found to have potential benefit for something completely unexpected. So there's a drug known as bentropine that has been found to actually promote myelin repair. And so that's being studied as a potential way to, again, help to assist the central nervous system in its own function of restoring myelin. Moving on to slide number 17. There's also have been recent advances, repurposing a drug, simvastatin. And simvastatin, many of you may be familiar with, is a drug that is used to help control or lower cholesterol. And a clinical trial in secondary progressive MS was being conducted at University College London by Jeremy Chataway, looking at high doses of simvastatin within 140 people with secondary progressive MS, found that treatment with simvastatin led to a decrease of about 50% in brain atrophy and a significant improvement in disability. And brain atrophy is a very important measure of changes in the central nervous system in MS, and what cerebral or brain atrophy refers to is the fact that over time in MS, not only is there demyelination and damage to the nerve fibers themselves, but also the brain seems to shrink as the myelin is damaged, as the nerve fibers are damaged. The actual size of the brain begins to get smaller over time. So that one of the outcome measures that's looked at in clinical trials in MS is whether or not a given treatment can slow or halt that process whereby the brain is actually shrinking over time. Moving on to slide number 18. Other recent advances, and again, we want to not only understand what progressive MS is all about, and we want to not only develop measures or treatments that can stop the process, but we also want to restore function. And so the society is supporting and has supported a number of studies looking at exercise and rehabilitation in MS. And some examples are, we talked earlier about aerobic exercise being beneficial for people with MS in terms of fatigue and quality of life and cardiovascular fitness. But there's also the other type of exercise known as resistive exercise. And to give you an example of what resistive exercise is if you lift weights or do something like that, where you are really expending force against some type of resistance, whether it's weight or something else. So the society has supported research that has looked at whether or not progressive resistance exercise can improve walking and quality of life in MS. And so far, the results seem very, very, very promising. The society has also looked at whether rehabilitation treatments that look at improving balance, and particularly using techniques that take advantage of eye movements in people and the fact that eye movements play a very important role in maintaining balance. And research there has shown that this type of training can improve fatigue, reducing disability due to dizziness and disequilibrium. And improving balance is very important because in MS, particularly as MS becomes more severe, people who have balance problems may be prone to falls, and if you fall, you can be injured, which simply makes life worse, obviously. In addition, the society has supported and is currently supporting research looking at different strategies for improving cognitive function in people who have cognitive challenges, and particularly looking at ways in which exercise may have benefits for cognitive functioning. So moving on to slide number 19. A common question that people ask is, well, what about stem cell therapy? Is the society doing anything to look at the potential for stem cell therapy? Well, and the answer is yes. There's a team at the University of Rochester which transplanted stem cells that were actually derived from human beings, from skin of people, and transplanted these into mice. The cells actually became myelin-producing cells pretty quickly and actually were able to form new myelin. Now, we're a long way from trying anything like that in humans, but this research really showed that there was potential for using a stem cell transplantation to actually restore myelin. Another study in Milan, Italy, transplanted myelin-making cells that, in this case, were derived from the skin of the mouse itself into the spinal cord of mice. And that transplanted, those transplanted stem cells seem to promote recovery and improvement in MS-like symptoms in a disease that is similar to MS, but that can be induced in mice. Moving on to slide number 20. So what is the society currently doing to find solutions for people who have the challenges of living with progressive forms of MS? Well, let's take a look at that and moving on to slide number 21. So the Society's research mission can be summarized in three words: stop, restore, and end. And so our goal is to find solutions that can stop the progression of MS, that can restore function, and that eventually can end MS forever. So the Society is looking for solutions for people with MS, and that's really our highest priority. Research is one of the essential tools to finding the kinds of solutions that can help to change people's lives who are living with MS, particularly progressive MS. And the society is fueling MS research through an increased investment in fiscal year 2014, which we're in the middle of right now. The society will have spent $50 million on MS research. And that's a tremendous growth from just a few years ago. So the approach we take is a comprehensive one. We look at all opportunities, all types of research, and we're also collaborating worldwide. We're not only focused on the United States, but really we're focused on MS wherever it may occur. So we're pursuing all promising paths wherever they exist and whoever is looking at them. And we have, in terms of research, we have three particular priority areas. Progressive MS is one, which is what we're talking about tonight. Nervous system repair, including myelin repair. And third, and this is something that sometimes surprises people, that our third priority area is wellness and lifestyle. And so the society is not only interested in the central nervous system and neuroimmunology and all of that sort of thing that you usually think of when you think about research, but the society is also interested in exercise, interested in quality of life, interested in diet, interested in all of the ways that wellness and a healthy lifestyle can help people live better with MS. And also the society is not standing still. The society is trying to remain as nimble as possible and to be open to promising new opportunities, whatever they may be and wherever they may be. And moving on to slide number 22. And so focusing more particularly on progressive forms of MS, the Society's research priorities include speeding up clinical trials in progressive MS so that we can find therapies for progressive MS, understanding what drives progression, what are the underlying causes of progression, the causes of nervous system damage, and how can we treat that damage? Finding better rehabilitation strategies and treatments for symptoms so that we can improve the quality of life of people living with MS. And also, particularly discovering how we can repair the nervous system so that we can not simply stop the progression, but that we can actually return people to a previous level of functioning. I'm moving on to slide number 23. So the society is driving solutions, including accelerating clinical trials in progressive MS. And some examples of that, there's a project underway known as the MS Outcome Assessments Consortium. And that consortium is developing a new measure of disability, a new way in which we can measure disability that's caused by MS that we hope will be recognized by the FDA and the European Medicines Agency, which is the European version of the FDA, to use this new measure in clinical trials of progressive MS so that we can speed up those trials and hopefully find some therapies that will work in MS. Other efforts that we have underway focus on things like high-tech imaging tools so that we have better tools for measuring the damage that occurs in the central nervous system, and also to assess neural protection and neural repair without having to wait long periods of time to observe changes in progression. So if we have imaging tools that can show us very quickly what's happening in the central nervous system, that would speed up clinical trials. We're also designing new ways to conduct clinical trials and to develop better outcome measures. Moving on to slide number 24. And so the society is looking at all sorts of innovative ways to measure function in clinical trials, including the use of things like tablet computers and other methods. Moving on to slide number 26. So in addition, the society is looking at ways in which we can undertake neural protection so that instead of simply waiting for damage to occur and then trying to treat that, to prevent the damage from happening in the first place. And we're looking at a number of different treatments that may have some potential for neuroprotection, things like lipoic acid, which is an antioxidant, phenytoin, which can change some of the biochemistry within the central nervous system, and a number of other therapies that are currently being tested that we hope at least one of them or more of them will have some neuroprotective potential. Moving on to slide number 27. And also, we're trying to understand what's driving progression, what produces the progression that occurs in MS. So we're exploring mechanisms that cause the central nervous system. We're exploring mechanisms that cause nervous system injury so that we can try and undercut those mechanisms, try and prevent the injury in the first place and thereby reduce progression. Using the most advanced imaging and laboratory studies to try and define MS disease activity and to track it over time. And also epidemiologic studies of large populations of people with MS so that we can identify the factors that seem to put people at risk for more progression. I'm moving on to slide number 28. And again, we talked about rehabilitation research, and currently the Society is funding more than 30 projects that are testing different ways to help people live their best lives. Studies looking at control of balance, improving lung function, reducing spasticity, exercise, improvement of walking, and of course improving cognitive function. Moving on to slide number 30. And also, the Society is very, very heavily committed to training the next generation of rehabilitation researchers so that we have scientists who are out there developing the next generation of rehabilitation strategies to help the people with MS achieve the physical, psychological, social, and vocational potential. And also funding health policy studies to convince both physicians and third-party payers of the value of rehabilitation and to convince them to support rehabilitation both in terms of referrals and in terms of third-party payments. Moving on to slide number 31. Again, we talked a little bit about nervous system repair. And the Society has a division of our research operation known as Fast Forward, in which we're collaborating with the MD Serono, which is a major drug company, to identify and validate new targets in repair and protection. Also, again, we're working with international collaborators to improve clinical trials, exploring the potential for different types of stem cells to promote repair, and also focusing on a number of tools that can help us to evaluate both damage and repair in MS. And lastly, the Society is supporting and collaborating in a new initiative known as the Progressive MS Alliance, which is an international initiative, which is a comprehensive approach to not only understanding progressive MS, but to do a number of different things to address progressive MS, including major research initiative, but also to look at other ways in which we can address the very unique needs of people with MS all over the world who are living with progressive forms of MS. Well, let me stop there. I think I've run a little bit over, and I want to thank you very much for the opportunity to talk about progressive MS and what we're doing, and now let me turn it back over to Heather.
Oh, thank you so much, Dr. LaRocca. Operator, we will now open the line for questions.
Yes, ma'am. Ladies and gentlemen, at this time, if there is any question that you would like to ask, please press the number 1 key on your phone. Again, if there is a question that you would like to ask, please press the number 1 key on your phone. Our first question is from Betty. Betty, go ahead. Betty, your line is live. Please go ahead with your question. Okay, our next question is from Helen. Helen, go ahead. Helen, go ahead with your question.
Hello.
Okay, we'll go on to our next question. Our next question is from Jeff. Jeff, go ahead.
Yes, early in the presentation, you said something about MRIs show demyelination quite well. Does it also reflect, I think you called it the death, the actual, the nerve disappearing as well, or is that not something that's reflected on an MRI?
It's difficult. It's difficult on an MRI to actually see that. And in fact, it really was many years after the MRI was developed that scientists began to talk about the fact that there was not only demyelination occurring in MS, but that the actual nerve fibers themselves were being damaged. And so it's still somewhat difficult to see that on MRI. And one of the ways in which scientists are able to recognize that that's happening is, again, we talked a little bit about cerebral atrophy, where the brain actually seems to be getting smaller. And part of the reason that that's happening is, again, the nerve fibers themselves are being damaged, and so the brain is sort of slowly shrinking. And so looking at atrophy has become something that's very important in clinical trials, and also doctors are beginning to look at it clinically as well, you know, as another way to kind of track what's happening to people.
Okay, our next question is from Betty. Betty, go ahead.
I was wondering if there's any research into the DNA ability to find the best treatments for MS.
Well, that's a great question. And, you know, what you're referring to is known as personalized medicine. And personalized medicine is going to be one of the next frontiers of research. The idea being, we know that there are something like a dozen MS therapies on the market currently, and different people seem to respond differently to different medications. But we don't know why. Well, we don't know if that's related to their genetic makeup, let's say. So it may be that people with different types of genetic makeup will respond differently to different medications. So scientists are very interested in trying to understand that. We're not there yet, and what we do know is that the genetics of MS seem to be very, very complex, that scientists have identified well over 100 areas of the human genome that seem to be related in different ways to multiple sclerosis. So it's going to take some time for scientists to sort all of that out and to relate it to the ways in which people respond to treatment. But that's definitely an important goal for the future, because if we can in some way predict who's going to respond best to which medications, then we'll really be far ahead in terms of selecting what's the right thing for a given person.
Our next question is from Jane. Jane, go ahead.
Yes, I was wondering... I've had MS for 35 years, and I was never given any of the ABC drugs because they thought I was doing so well. But now within the last 2 years, I've been diagnosed with progressive MS, and I'm having to use a cane all the time for balance so I don't fall, or a rolling walker. And I was just wondering... has the time passed to get any benefit from the ABC drugs? And what can we do now? Unfortunately, I missed the first part of your presentation.
Sure. So, well, that's a very good question. And, you know, I can't comment on your particular situation. A couple of things, though. Over time, and remember, the first MS disease-modifying therapy was introduced just a little over 20 years ago. So being able to actually treat MS is a pretty recent development. And over the course of the last 20 years, the ways in which doctors use those medications has evolved somewhat, that based on research and based on clinical observation, doctors are introducing therapy in many cases much earlier than they did in the past. And in fact, in many instances, they're introducing medication before a firm diagnosis of MS can be made. So at the present time, I guess you would say that the treatment of MS is a little bit more aggressive than it was in those early days. In terms of someone who has already progressed and has already reached a point where they have a lot of challenges related to the MS, I think there are a few things to think about. One is that there are a lot of ways to treat the different symptoms of MS, whatever they may be, whether it's spasms or whether it's difficulty in terms of bladder functioning, fatigue, and so forth, that for some of those problems there are medications that work very well. But more and more we're looking at both rehabilitation and lifestyle interventions. Again, we talked a lot about exercise and the potential benefits of exercise. And also, we know that it's important, whether you have MS and whatever type of MS you have and whatever the challenges are, that maintaining good general health, adopting a wellness lifestyle is going to be important, because it will help to maximize your independence as much as possible, and help you to really live your best life and take advantage of the abilities that are still there and that are, you know, perhaps affected by MS but are still somewhat intact.
Hello.
Are there any other questions, Alma?
Yeah, I'm sorry.
Oh,
our next
okay.
question is from Christine. Christine, go ahead.
Hi, yes. About the atrophy, does that mean if you have atrophy, is it over the whole brain or a specific part of the brain? And does that mean the disease is progressing? Thank you.
Sure. Well, that's a great question. And originally, when scientists began looking at this whole issue of atrophy, they were looking at it from the standpoint of the whole brain or sort of large areas of the brain. There are different ways to look at atrophy. Over time, they've begun to look at specific areas of the brain and to try and match up changes that may be occurring in specific areas of the brain with changes that may be occurring in people's symptoms. And so, you know, they've looked, for example, at whether or not people who are depressed have changes in certain areas of the brain, whether people with certain types of cognitive problems have changes in certain parts of the brain. So, the more they look at this, the more complicated it becomes. But scientists are developing a much better understanding of what some of these changes are and what they mean in terms of people's functioning. over time, looking at atrophy has become more and more important, and particularly looking at which treatments may seem to slow that process. So I think we're going to learn some very interesting things in the near future about atrophy and the ways in which we can slow or halt that process.
Our next question is from Elaine. Elaine, go ahead.
Yes, thank you for taking my question. On slide 17, you had mentioned simvastatin, which is normally used to lower cholesterol. I am presently taking pravastatin. Are they similar, and is there any chance that there could be a correlation there with that or not?
I confess I don't know the answer to your question. You know, there's quite a bit of similarity among the different statin drugs, and there's a few of them. Whether or not other statins may have some value is a little bit hard to say at this point. So I guess we would have to say the jury is still out. And scientists have been looking at statins and MS for a few years. The whole issue has sort of waxed and waned. You know, originally it looked very promising, and then there was some negative results, and now they're beginning to look at it a little bit more. So stay tuned. I think there's a lot more to be learned about the potential for statins, but right now we really don't know enough to characterize them.
Our next question is from Janet. Janet, go ahead.
Thank you. I've had primary progressive for over 25 years, and I've always been able to project my voice. As a teacher, I could really project. But now my voice is getting so people can't even hear me almost. It's getting so low. Is there anything that I can do for that, or is that my primary progressive working?
Well, that's a great question, and I think it's a complicated answer. I think that as people get older, and I've even noticed that myself, that your voice tends to not be as strong as you get older. So, and I think we have to remember that the fact that you have MS and doesn't mean that all of these other changes that occur in life aren't going to change. So obviously you're still subject to the same age-related changes. Definitely MS can affect basically any function that's controlled by the nervous system, which is just about everything. And so, you know, it is possible that changes in your voice and the strength of your voice could be caused by something having to do with MS. One of the areas that has been neglected quite a bit in MS is speech pathology. And if you have experienced changes in your voice or in swallowing or anything along those lines, that you should talk to your doctor about whether or not it would make sense for you to be seen by a speech pathologist so that you can get a hopefully better idea of, you know, what's going on. Is there anything that can be done? Speech therapists sometimes will have interventions, sometimes certain types of exercise that can strengthen the voice. So, again, you know, something talk to your doctor about, and you know, see if your doctor thinks that referral might be in order.
And now, Alma, I think we have time for one more question.
Yes, ma'am. Our final question is from Connie. Connie, go ahead.
Yes, thank you. You talked about spasticity, and I'm interested in types of medication that you would say work to help with spasticity. And I also want to ask you, along with that, you talked about the caller had asked about cycling. I have a CardioGlide. I don't know if you know what that is, that I use, and I'm wondering what you think about that.
Hey, well, that's two great questions. In terms of the CardioGlide, I'm not familiar with it, and you know, I would sort of hesitate to comment on your particular situation. I think that there are a variety of different types of exercise that people with MS can engage in. I think that the specific tools that you use are perhaps less important than developing a program that is that you can stick with, and a program that's appropriate for your needs and whatever limitations you might have. So I think you would want to talk to your doctor about any exercise program that you might want to engage in, and try and get some maybe some professional help, whether it's a trainer who's familiar with MS, or if your local chapter has any resources that you can be referred to. And many physical therapists can help you to design an exercise program that would work well for you. So again, I think there's a wide variety of different types of exercise that can be good. Lots of different tools, whether it's bikes or elliptical trainers or other devices. The important thing is to find what's most appropriate for you, and particularly something that you'll be able to stick with. Now, you also had a question about spasticity. Spasticity is a very common problem in MS, and it can take many different forms. Sometimes it takes the form of fairly painful spasms that sometimes can disrupt sleep, also can result in stiffness. There are drugs on the market that can treat spasticity. Exactly what would be right for you would be something that you and your doctor would have to work out, and I think very often what happens is that a physician will prescribe something and test it out for a while, see how well it works. There are most of the drugs that are used to treat spasticity also have side effects, and that sometimes limits their usefulness. So you'd want to talk with your doctor about what type of spasticity you're experiencing, when you're experiencing it, and maybe talk about what are the opportunities in terms of treatment.
Okay. This concludes our program. Thank you, everyone on the line, for joining us tonight. And also, I thank you, Dr. LaRocca, for presenting on the topic of what's happening now in progressive MS research.
And my pleasure.
Thanks again. To everyone on the call, please take the time to respond to our program survey online included in our program reminder email, or contact your chapter to receive the link. If you have any questions, please don't hesitate to contact us at 1-800-344-4867. At this time, all participants are invited to remain on the line and give their responses to three short survey questions. I hope you all enjoy a pleasant evening. Good night.
Ladies and gentlemen, this begins our polling session. Our first question, I learned something new that I will use in my everyday life. Press 1 for yes or press 2 for no. Again, I learned something new that I will use in my everyday life. Press 1 for yes or 2 for no. The poll is now closed for this question. Please hold while we prepare our next question. Question 2. The content was presented clearly and in an unbiased way. Press 1 for yes, 2 for no. Again, the content was presented clearly and in an unbiased way. Press 1 for yes, 2 for no. Okay, the poll is now closed for that question. Please hold while we prepare our final question. Final question. The speaker was knowledgeable about the topic. Press 1 for yes, 2 for no. Again, the speaker was knowledgeable about the topic. Press 1 for yes, 2 for no. Okay, thank you so much, ladies and gentlemen. The call is now concluded. This ends our polling session. You may all disconnect.